All right, let's talk about electric cars and the differences between hot fusion and cold fusion. Now, I've written a very lengthy, extremely detailed article about cold fusion, also called LENR, L-E-N-R, Low Energy Nuclear Reactions. I've published this story on naturalnews.com and also on substack.com. My channel on Substack is healthranger.substack.com. Or you can just go to substack.com and you can search for, let's say, hot fusion, L-E-N-R, because I've got both of those terms in the title, and you'll find the article. It's a very important read to get yourself up to speed on the differences between hot and cold fusion. I will summarize them here, but the article gives you a lot more. Now, first, let's back up. The world will shift to fusion as its primary energy source. This is inevitable. We're currently on the fossil fuel economy. We still need fossil fuels for quite a long time to come, several decades still, in fact. But eventually the shift is going to move into some kind of fusion, either hot or cold fusion. Now, the establishment wants us to be on hot fusion for reasons I shall describe, whereas you and I, being pro-liberty people, pro-human people, decentralization, we want cold fusion, and I'll explain why. Now, both hot and cold fusion generate excess heat. This heat can then be used to, let's say, turn water into steam and drive turbines that generate alternating current, or using thermoelectric exotic materials, you can convert heat directly into electrical current. The efficiency of those materials is currently at around 40%. It has improved substantially over the last decade from about 20% to 40%. As that efficiency improves, we'll probably get closer to 80% here at some point, and you'll be able to just turn heat into electrical current. But there are huge differences between hot and cold fusion in terms of what it takes to get them going, and then whether it's centralized or decentralized. In other words, is it pro-freedom or is it enslaving to humanity? And the short version is that hot fusion, which is big budgets, big science, big government. You have the big tokamak containment systems that use magnetic containment. You've got 192 lasers focusing their energy on a little tiny pellet in order to drive it to over 3 million degrees centigrade, I believe. And that causes fusion like what happens in the sun. And then from that, you are able to generate excess heat that is more heat than what you put in. Currently, 1.5 times more energy is produced than what you put in. Now, cold fusion is small scale. It's relatively cheap. It's relatively easy. Cold fusion devices can be made with relatively simple parts. They're easy to maintain. And importantly, they don't need to be connected to any grid. Whereas hot fusion, because it's a giant multi-billion dollar, fusion center, it still has to transmit that power over electrical lines to your home or your business, which means that power is metered, which means it's surveilled with smart meters. It means it's controlled. It means it can be cut off. And it means you can't really be off-grid. It also means for electric vehicles, you have to stop at charging stations and you have to charge your car because you can't charge it while you're driving because you don't have a long enough extension cord to run down the highway with it plugged in, right? Whereas cold fusion is decentralized, it's off-grid. Eventually, you will have a unit that you can put in the trunk of your car, or a unit about the size of an HVAC system or a heat pump that you can put beside your house. Again, it won't be connected to the grid. It will generate electricity 24/7. While you're driving your car, it will charge your car. While you're parking your car, it will charge your car. While your car is in the shop, it will charge your car. It's 24/7. Now, you'll still have batteries in the car because while driving, you may be consuming more than what you're generating during the actual driving moments. But when you park it, it starts to recharge, you see, and you'll never need a charging station. And for your home, yes, you'll probably have batteries for your home as well. In fact, I'm sure of it. You'll have some energy storage devices there. You'll have what I call hybrid homes, kind of like hybrid vehicles that Toyota makes. And you'll have a battery pack, and then you'll have a cold fusion generator that's just generating electricity 24/7. The battery pack is designed to help smooth out your peak usage versus your low usage, which is usually nighttime. So during the night, the cold fusion units just generating all the power in the batteries, charging the batteries and providing current for whatever else you have going on, HVAC systems, you know, your cook stove, your toaster, your hair dryer, whatever. But the difference in all this technology is that cold fusion is decentralized. It's grassroots. It's organic, you could say. It allows privacy and it allows mobility because you can drive your car essentially forever without having to refuel. I mean, not exactly forever, but let's say for years without having to change the fuel out because, you know, E equals MC squared. It's a big number with a little bit of fuel. So whereas hot fusion requires you to be connected to the grid, your car, your home, your business, what have you. So that is centralized and centrally controlled. This is why government wants to push hot fusion. It's complex, it's costly, but it has big funding for, you know, defense manufacturers like Lockheed Martin, which has a patent on a compact nuclear fusion reactor that's a hot fusion system that fits on the back of a tractor trailer. You can drive it around. It fits in a shipping container, basically, which goes on the back of a truck. And that patent was issued in 2018. So for those listening who might think, oh, the hot fusion doesn't even exist. Yes, it does. It was patented in 2018. I mean, just one rendition of it. Or people who think cold fusion doesn't exist. Oh, yes, it does. Unless you don't believe in the laws of physics. Cold fusion is as real as atomic physics phenomena. It's just part of the construct of the cosmos. And it just took time for humanity to get around to understanding it and harnessing it, which is what's happening now. So cold fusion is about to take the world by storm, which is why they're allowing hot fusion news to be released, because they, the globalists, the governments, and so on, they want hot fusion to dominate this landscape because it's centralized control over power. Now, as I pointed out in my natural news story, scarcity is the weapon. It's the control mechanism of the governments of the world. They want food scarcity to control populations. They want energy scarcity to control economies. And they want information scarcity, i.e. censorship and deplatforming, in order to control thoughts and ideas and narratives. Scarcity is what they want. And through hot fusion, they can engineer scarcity into the system because they can turn off your house. They can turn off your city. Maybe there's a civil war and your city or state or county or whatever isn't going along with the current government tyranny program, well, they can just turn off your city. You have no power. Surrender, right? Whereas if everybody has cold fusion devices all over the city or the county, well, cold fusion can't be shut off remotely because it's distributed. Again, it's local. The unit is generating power right there at your home site. And because it's generating power where it's at, not transmitting power, we don't need these long transmission lines, which also cause cancer. By the way, if you're really close to high voltage power lines, you're getting cancer. We won't need those anymore. But in addition to that, you can put these units on boats and ships, including naval vessels. Now, currently, the United States powers a lot of its vessels, especially aircraft carriers, with nuclear power plants, which is, you know, traditional fuel rods, you know, enriched uranium and the whole deal. But you can replace those with cold fusion systems or even hot fusion systems, frankly. Either one would work, but the Navy will probably go with hot fusion, you know, because there's more money involved and so bigger budgets. But cold fusion could work there as well. Cold fusion could power barges. Cold fusion could power eventually, as it becomes more efficient, and it'll take a lot of years for this to happen, but 10, 20 years down the road, it could power airplanes. It could power construction equipment. It could even one day power tractors, which requires very high energy density. Because tractors, you know, you need 100 horsepower or more. Some of them are 200 horsepower in order to, you know, plow a field or run a cutter or a combine or a baler or what have you. You know, it's a lot of power. So that's going to take a while, but it will happen. And as I pointed out in my story and my podcast on this, cold fusion will make energy very inexpensive, which will make food inexpensive, and it will make water and irrigation also very inexpensive. So food abundance will be one of the natural results of this, which is one reason the globalists hate it, because food abundance leads to population explosions, and they don't want populations, not humans, anyway. They're all about crickets and animals, but not humans. That's why they're anti-humanists or depopulation pushers. So this is one reason why the establishment is going to be totally opposed to cold fusion. They don't want energy to be accessible in a distributed, affordable, cheap, low-maintenance fashion to third-world countries, especially not countries like, let's say, Nigeria, which is exploding in population. And if Nigeria had free energy, that country would absolutely take off in terms of its economy and population and exports and farming and agriculture and so on. In fact, all of Africa would be wildly transformed by this technology through desalination plants, so they could harvest water from the oceans essentially for free or close to it, which means food would be abundant and readily available. They could transform deserts into croplands, very productive croplands. This would also eliminate the advantage of America's breadbasket, because the United States regime knows that food scarcity is a system of control worldwide. And the more they can control limited food resources, then the more leverage they can wield geopolitically across the world. This is a similar story with energy scarcity, but you got to understand the real policy of the United States is to keep the rest of the world on oil while achieving domestic energy scarcity in order to create economic problems and control systems domestically. So in effect, the U.S. regime, currently represented by the Biden handlers, is pro-oil globally, but anti-oil domestically. And I know it's hard for people to wrap their heads around that, but that's actually the current policy. And why are they pro-oil globally or internationally? Because they need the petrodollar status. The petrodollar is what allows the United States to print trillions of dollars and then to export inflation without ruining the domestic economy. But you have to have the petrodollar status in order to be able to export inflation into other nations, because, you know, the Bretton Woods Agreement and the petrodollar status, which has been enforced by Saudi Arabia for all these decades, forces other nations to buy dollars in order to buy oil from the Saudis. And as those other nations buy dollars, that creates demand for dollars, which prevents the currency from hyperinflating due to runaway money printing. So once you lose oil internationally as the primary energy source, the petrodollar goes with it. It's gone. And that's why the United States wants oil to be used internationally, but not domestically. But nevertheless, the petrodollar is going to collapse. And it's going to collapse because the Saudis have shifted their loyalties to China. And China and Russia and India and Brazil and so on, the BRICS nations, are working on their world reserve currency, which will likely be released next year, is what it looks like. I mean, in pilot programs, it's already active. But I mean, a more broad release next year. And as that happens, more nations will abandon the petrodollar. And then the United States will very quickly, in 2024 and beyond, it will find itself in a situation where it is unable to keep printing money to stimulate the zombie economy without causing runaway inflation, no matter how low the Fed keeps interest rates. Even though they're currently raising rates, they're probably going to pivot and start lowering rates sometime in 2023 as all of this is happening. But hyperinflation is inevitable because the U.S. cannot stop money printing. They can't stop the stimulus of the zombie economy, because the real economy has collapsed for reasons that are, you know, beyond this particular podcast. But the real economy is in shambles. We're not producing. People aren't working like they used to work. There's not productivity like it used to be. The United States is largely an agrarian society with key exports of food and energy too, by the way, fossil fuel energy, but not a lot of manufacturing, as you well know. So anyway, those are some of the dynamics that are in play. And that helps explain why the hot fusion pushers feel threatened by cold fusion success. So you're going to hear a lot about this in the coming years. I'm tied into some of the people deep inside the cold fusion industry. I know some of the names of the big, wealthy, high IQ people involved in this, and their names would shock you. I'm not releasing them unless I'm publicly or given permission to do so publicly. So I'm going to keep that under my hat, but the names would shock you. The ties they have to the tech industry would shock you. but it's all very real. Investments are being made. Prototypes have been proven. They're moving into production, commercialization applications of cold fusion technology. Heat applications are first, and then after that will be heat conversion into electrical current, those types of applications. It'll be large scale at first for military bases and large buildings, hotels, you know, manufacturing plants and so on. And then over time, they will get smaller and smaller so that they could be used in households or, you know, dormitories or things like that, smaller buildings. And then eventually a size that would fit into a vehicle or maybe could fit on an airplane someday. And again, it's going to take time. This isn't going to happen tomorrow, but it is inevitable. It's coming. And I will keep you posted as best I can. You can follow all my work at naturalnews.com or healthranger.substack.com, which is a more easily shareable address. You can also follow my podcast, of course, on brighteon.com, the platform that I founded. And also be sure to check out our other guests and hosts on brighteon.tv and brighteonradio.com. Thank you for listening. God bless you. I'm Mike Adams. Take care.